Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. This is Ben Baker. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It is a pleasure having you guys back. Every single week, I have more people join us. They comment on the show. They love the show. They subscribe to the show. So everybody who subscribes to the show, thank you very much. Go to yourlivingbrand.live, hit the subscribe button, tell your friends, join the conversation. And if there's someone that you'd like me to have as a guest, let me know, because I'm always into having a conversation. And this week, I have Deborah. I'm going to kill it. I know I'm going to kill it. Cavillo, right? Did I get it right?
Moviello.
Moviello. I knew I was going to kill it.
Good Irish.
There we go. It's perfect. Deborah, welcome to the show. And we need to talk because I love what you're doing. I love the fact what you're doing is necessary. It's unique. It's different. And you know what? You help an amazing amount of companies be better. So let's get into this conversation. Tell me the story, Deborah. Tell me where you came from and tell me where you are. And then we'll get together and we'll find out where we're going together.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you. I'm game for this. And hopefully I can live up to that expectation that you shared with everybody. But I mean, maybe I'll just start with where I'm at now and then kind of back into it. I am the founder of Illumination Partners. I am a consulting business that helps small and medium-sized flavor, fragrance, and ingredient companies through major transitions in their quality and continuous improvement space. That's how I came to arrive at this point. And it's fantastic work. I get to work with business owners, vice presidents, that I really get deep understanding in what is it that gives them peace of mind. And I talk about peace of mind a lot, not just the results they want to achieve, because at the end of the day, they want confidence. I'm going to take care of them. But in the work that I'm doing now, and I'll come back to why I'm doing it, I find there is so much untapped potential in up-and-coming professionals that have the awareness that they need to become leaders, but don't necessarily have the essential skills. So whether I'm operating within my client's organization and I see talent and try to elevate them, or in an online course that I'm developing now focused on those high-performance individuals to give them the best of my knowledge, that's really the work that I love to do and how I put myself out there on social media. But going back a few years, and I don't want to put years to it.
Well, you're only 26, right?
Absolutely. Look,
there we go.
I'm stuck at 32.
Okay.
And that's how I feel. So biomedical engineering background, I've had the good fortune of working in manufacturing and quality and operational excellence in the military industry, electronics, defense systems, and finally in the chemical, flavor, and fragrance industry. And all the while, honing my skills in quality, continuous improvement. I'm a Six Sigma black belt, lean black belt, helping operational efficiency. And I love the manufacturing environment, being able to take something and creating something or improving it. But what I've learned in my later years, probably my last 5 years in corporate before I started my own business, was that there were a lot of smarter people than me. And it was my job to ultimately elevate those people that were on my team to achieve the results. And I learned that my hard skills were amazing, but that wasn't what was going to get me ahead. And so I started learning and understanding how people operated, how to make them more efficient and effective, finding their why, finding their how, not necessarily what they do. And so I grew to love the human dimension of the work that I do now. So that's really the foundation of how I operate as a leader, how I run my business, what I bring forward in my own podcast, The Drop-In CEO, insights and inspiration from industry leaders to elevate them in how they perform in the work that they do.
That's awesome. It's interesting because, you know, coming from the process industry, coming from that process engineering background, that thought process, that very, okay, how do we make things work mentality? And how do we make things better mentality? That's going to make you a really great part-time CEO, because taking a look at companies from an outside point of view and saying, okay, what's working, what's not working, and how do we make it better? So I want to talk to you about that, because what brought you to that thought process, you know, that this would be the next ultimate step, and to be able to be the person that came in on a part-time basis and helped companies not only improve their process, but their people and their organizations, and be able to elevate companies in ways that maybe a full-time CEO can't, because you come from it from a very different point of view when you're there, you know, on a project basis versus when you're there as the white knight walking in to change the world.
So I have to give credit to a lot of years of training and experience. As an operational excellence quality professional, you learn a lot about problem solving, and through the methodology of problem solving of, you know, what is the root cause, what are the different dimensions, whether it's people, process, tools, management, materials, breaking down a problem and looking at all different aspects, it forces you to be a generalist, be able to look wide across many different dimensions, human factors, process factors, and ultimately try to get to the root cause that not only fixes a problem, but also prevents a problem. And so I've actually honed my skill over the years as being a generalist. When I do problem solving, when I have an initiative to try to make $5 million cost savings, it's about stepping back and looking at what's the current state. What do I have in front of me in terms of resources? What is the current operating procedure? What is the ultimate outcome I want to get to, not just simply the results? And so as a generalist, I've come to hone in my skill to be able to look at all dimensions, investing a lot of time in the human factor. Who are the humans that I have on the team to actually do this work? And so I'll do an organizational assessment and then more of a strategic assessment of how you bridge the gap from A to B. And then I put forth those recommendations to the clients. And so then I act as their partner. Yes, there'll still be a vice president or a sponsor or CEO that I may be working for, but in essence, I take a piece of the business off of their shoulders, and I then go in and do a generalist assessment of everything that they need to do, make the proposal, align it with their objectives, and then I just go. And I do what I do for the period of time to help those businesses transition to where they need to be. And like any good CEO, they're really only good for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. Then you pull them out, and you bring in somebody that has the next level of skills to take it to the next level. So when you see a CEO come in 18, 24 months, and then they're gone, it may be they serve a purpose for a particular point in time, and then you need something different. So that's why I call myself the drop-in CEO. It's more of a mindset, but it's that partnership I have with the leader that I'm working with to bring them to where they need to go. And that's what CEOs do.
That's interesting, because I want to unpack that a little bit, because you talked about the people side and the process side. And I find that most people are either really good at process or they're really good at people, or they're very bad at both. But what I find is there's very few people that can understand how process and people work together, and especially across departments. Had a conversation time after time on this show about the challenges of silos, the challenges of miscommunication or ineffective communication, or not understanding objectives, not understanding vision and value and where the company is going. And it's got to be challenging at times for a lot of people to look inside their company and say, we know there's a problem, but we can't figure out where it is. And I'd love to know, how do you unpack that? Like, on a basis by basis thing is, how do you unpack that to be able to sit there and say, okay, how do these two parts of the business, the people part and the process part, how do I get them to come together and understand how they coexist, and how the problem really is part of both of them and how they interact with each other?
So you've hit on something that I've given a lot of thought to, because I will say that for many, many years, I was very good at the process. You know, man, method, machine, root cause analysis, let's fix this, fix that, and we get to our result. And I may not have been able to navigate or influence people or get really the results I want in a quick or efficient way. So I had to learn the people skills later in life, probably much later than I should have. But what I find, though, is that I get farther when I start with the people in the organization, getting to know them, and I'll dig into that a little bit more. And once I get to know the people, the rest comes easy. It really does, because if I started with the hard skills, and I've done that, I've started with running a project to get a particular process improvement efficiency, and I had to stop and rework and go back because I didn't start with getting to know the people. And so now I have learned the hard way. And I actually have this 7P approach. It's an influence model, but it's a framework by which where you start. If you have a significant change you need to make, you have an initiative, you're integrating companies, I really start at the bottom and the foundation. And it's really getting to know people's past, their culture, what do they bring forward, and their pride. And their pride is the intersection of the human and their intellectual property. So what gifts have they brought forward over the years, their talent, what have they created, et cetera? And of course, just getting to know them on a personal level. When I start with getting to know their past, the gifts they bring forward, and them on a personal note, I find that when I have to start unpacking the problem, moving the organization towards a particular process change, a platform change, it's so much easier. So I start with the people dimensions. And then, of course, once we establish that foundation, if you can envision a house, you problem solve people, process, platforms, etc. But the thing that I also do a little bit different is when I go into an organization, I help people think bigger than just the performance that they want to achieve. So more often we're results oriented. If we only ask for people to get only the results, that's all you're ever going to get. But I talk about purposeful leadership, or what is the ultimate thing that you want to get to, and that's what is that peace of mind. So if you get the results, you reduce customer complaints, you high five at the end of the day and say, okay, we have great customer service, they love us. Not so. You might actually lose them as a customer, because the ultimate thing that you want to build with customers is the peace of mind that you got their back, you become their favorite partner. And if you get people to think in terms of the greater purpose, the greater why, that peace of mind, how are people going to sleep at night? Those customers may actually retain you and work with you, even if you don't have the best quality, because you got your back, you've built meaningful partnerships, and you focused on the outcome. So when you have a people-centric mindset and framework, their past, their present, their pride, and what is the ultimate peace of mind or purpose that you're trying to get to, then once established, I'll work the mechanics, leveraging my process skills, root cause analysis, whatever you want to do to get the change that you want to meet. That's what makes the outcome more successful and sustainable.
Well, you're speaking my language. That's absolutely where I sit in the leadership warehouse. Is the people plus purpose equals profit. It's a simple, simple mathematical formula that people plus purpose equals profit. If you just focus on the profit, if you just focus on that air end, you become a commodity. You become low value, low cost, easily forgotten and easily replaced. But if you have amazing people and you have a strong purpose, a strong culture, and you can communicate that both internally and externally, amazing things happen for companies. Absolutely amazing things happen for companies, and people will buy into change. And this is where I want to go with this, is that change scares people like nothing else. And when there's changes going on, and if there's small changes, they're large changes, whenever that change happens, it hits people viscerally. And people, they'll reject it, or they'll block it, or they'll do whatever they can if they don't understand how that change makes their lives better. So how do you go about that? Because that's a big part of it. And you're right. I mean, we can get to know our people, we can work on our process, but if we don't bring people along in the process, if we don't get people to understand how those changes benefit not only the company, but the individuals within it, and help them be more effective at helping their customers, and along the chain it goes, that process change probably will not be effective.
So I've done this a couple times, obviously, amidst large teams, and being part of the flavor fragrance industry, often these large corporations will grow and acquire and then harmonize and then phase out certain operations. So often by nature of this manufacturing expansion and decrease of your footprints, people will ultimately lose their jobs. So that is a significant change. And I've done this in a couple different companies. when they know they're going to lose their job, they're going to be consolidated, their work is going to be transferred to someplace else, I go in to try to establish common ground. And what I find the common ground is we just want to provide good service and quality to our customers. If they have the right DNA within them, that's all we're trying to do. And we all follow back. So once I've done the trust and get to know the person and understand their gifts that they bring forward, and then we establish that common ground, the nitty gritty of how we actually get there, close the plant, etc., we'll get through that. But I find if I keep going back, what are we all here for? What's the common thing that we both value? That's where I found the most success. And when I find that I've closed down these companies, at least they felt at the end of the day, I did the best thing by the customer. I transferred that knowledge. We didn't have a disruption of service. People feel good about themselves. And of course, the business has to take care of these people at the end of the day. They're making a personal commitment, an emotional commitment. They trust the change. We're going to treat them with respect based on a common shared value. People will leave the company feeling, okay, I had a good experience. So again, it all starts with the human and helping to form common ground to be able to move them through the change. Not everybody survives. They have to also have some self-awareness and reflection on themselves, but you just have to communicate with people, and that's probably the best tool that I can say.
But it's also the word that you use is dignity. Having to realize that these are actually human beings with families and mortgages and expenses and everything that goes along with it. And there's challenging. I mean, I've heard stories through the crisis of 400 plus people being fired on a 120-second Zoom chat. And the person who actually delivered the message didn't even put their camera on. They read a prepared statement from the president of the company, and 400 people, or whatever the number was, were fired in 120 seconds. There are ways to help people through that transition. Yes, there's going to be redundancies. Yes, unfortunately, there is going to be damage and you're going to lose people. And hopefully you don't lose great people. And these things happen. But it's a matter how you do it. I have a friend of mine who was brought in because they were closing a plant and they were taking the 350 or 400 jobs offshore. But her job was for 7 months to make sure that every single person either found another job, was upgraded in the skills that they needed to do. They did job fairs and did whatever. They got them hired by other companies. And it was done in a way that it was done humanly. So therefore, you now have, in this particular case, 600 or 800 people that left that company with a great taste in their mouth that are still talking about that brand and how that brand took care of them as the brand had to move on. And they were sad that they lost their job, but each and every single one of them had a positive story about how they were taken care of. So that's where we need to be looking.
You know, this is so relevant because I'm in a situation, drop-in quality leader. We are shutting a plant down, but the company is treating them with dignity. We're keeping them completely informed. I personally am working with individuals on their career development, how to update their resume, and to contemplate what the next step might be. Again, treating with respect. They're giving their all and we're treating them the right way. And you never know where those connections may come back around. Even if we part ways now, we may be collaborating later on. So yeah, there's so much better ways that we can do that. Treat the human right and the human will come back and treat you right.
It's true because you're right. I mean, the person that you let go today may end up going to a company that could either be a competitor of yours or a partner of yours. And it all depends on how that situation comes up together. And today, partnerships are so strong. Partnerships are what make companies better. And if we can sit there and say, you know what, we're going to take care of our vendors. We're going to take care of our people. We're going to take care of our clients. And we're going to put the best face forward that we can. And this is the purpose of the organization. And we're going to live it from the CEO down to the person who sends stuff out on the shipping floor. And everybody in between, people notice and people talk about that. And people are proud to be part of those companies and they're proud to work for those companies and work with those companies and buy from those companies. And that's what we need to think is that we're not just affecting a process. We're not just affecting moving stuff from one person to the other. We're affecting how does the ecosystem work? And the more we can think of this as an ecosystem that's interrelated, the better off we're going to be.
Can't agree with you more. I just know by treating people with respect, not burning bridges, as I venture out into my consulting company, I'm finding relationships from 7-10 years ago just popping up. Hey, Deb, we need your help. So that's a testament to, one, I treated people well, left a good taste in their mouth. And again, that's something that anybody can learn from, whether you're a business or an individual business owner or moving up in your career. Think about those relationships. You may be frustrated. There may be changes. You may not get along with anybody. And again, I'm speaking to individuals, but just think about, what do you want to be remembered by? How do you want to be known? Because that's going to carry with you, and you never know how it's going to come back, or you might have to work together and partner.
That's true. We first started this conversation, you said something, and I've always wondered, so I'm going to ask you, what is a Six Sigma black belt? What is the definition of it, and what does that really mean? Like, what does it do for you by going through the Six Sigma certification?
I got a few white hairs from that one.
I can't see them.
Thanks. So Six Sigma black belt, the black belt is really simply a mastery of a certain amount of knowledge. So there is a hierarchy. You go up various levels, just like in the sport of karate, taekwondo. It demonstrates that you have one of the highest levels of understanding and application of the knowledge. When it comes to Six Sigma, Six Sigma relates to defect reduction. So for instance, if you make 1,000 widgets on a production line and you're throwing out, 100 of them, that's money out the window. And you are make the only game in town and making a lot of money, that's fine. But when competition comes in, throwing away 100 widgets out of 1,000, you were losing money before, but you know what? Somebody's chomping at the bit, and you need to do something to reduce the amount of variation in your process so that you don't have to be throwing out those widgets. Maybe you only throw out 3 widgets per 1,000. Puts more money in your bank account, takes away, all of that waste. And so if you can look at a process and reduce the variation, all those little things that ultimately result in a defect, it's being able to do that deep root cause analysis, break it into its components, make the necessary changes, sustain the changes, and move another level of performance. So I did that time and time again. I specialize in root cause analysis. And there are many things, ugly statistics and analysis of variation. If you can master some of this stuff, design of experiments, ways to improve your efficiency, you will then get tested and have to demonstrate. And eventually you get a certificate as a Six Sigma black belt.
There you go. And you get a nice big certificate. You can put it on the wall and say, look, I went through hours and hours and hours of training to gain this knowledge. But the value is that you have that insight and you have that ability to sit there and go, okay, this isn't working. Why isn't it working? And how do we make this better? And I think that that's something every single person needs to be thinking about, whether you're a Six Sigma black belt or whether you're just the person on the floor. Everybody needs to be thinking about what's inefficient, what's not working, what's causing us grief and tearing our hair out. And how do we make it better? Because I think that's really the responsibility of everybody to be able to step up and try to make the company better.
This should be a skill for everybody. I mean, obviously, people can go to a job and do day in and day out a particular job, but going through the lens of what's inefficient, where am I producing waste? At the end of the day, if it was my business, I'd want to get rid of that. I mean, I regularly look at my subscriptions and do I really need that expense? I look at how I operate on a day-to-day basis. Am I having to rework, put something into 3 different spreadsheets? I'm constantly looking even at the ways that I operate to be more efficient, be able to get more done in less time or have more time for myself. And so it's actually a mindset, whether it's Six Sigma or lean methodology, we're here to get rid of those inefficiencies in what we do, because ultimately it's money and it's people's time. And if you put it in the context of time, people don't want to be working 12, 14 hour days. They want to work 8 hours a day and spend time doing the things they want. So if you go in with a mindset of saying, these are the optimum performance levels, and this is where I'm at, and trying to bridge those gaps, whether it's Six Sigma or lean, it's a mindset. How do I look for efficiency? And I think any leader, any business should be able to go around and say, what's worked for me before may not work now. And how can I get everybody at all levels of the organization to evaluate, is this the best way of operating? Are there better ways? Do I need all these resources? Can I shift resources when I go from maybe a paper method to an automated method? How can I leverage the resources I have to better partner with customers? Constantly looking at what you're doing through operational efficiencies, using whatever approach I think is necessary for individuals, leaders, and CEOs of companies.
but it's also compensating people and motivating people to be part of the process. I have this vivid memory of starting off in the printing industry 25 years ago in direct mail. And I would fly a client of mine to Alberta. We'd go and we'd be at a press for 3 days solid. Because the reason we were doing 500,000 piece direct mail campaigns, and they were 32 page catalogs or 64 page catalogs. So you weren't being able to print the entire catalog at once. You'd do one run, then you'd have to set up the press and run again and run again and run again. Fine. But the challenge was every time you changed the plates, every time you changed the image, you had a different run-up sequence. And this guy goes, well, why is it taking so long? Why is it taking so long? So one time I took him down to the press. And there's these two huge bins that are 6 feet by 6 feet by probably 4.5 feet tall. And they're full of scraps of paper. And the guy goes, what is that? I goes, that's the run up for your job. This press is running reel to reel at 50,000 sheets an hour. So we've got 50,000 sheets running every single hour. So think about how fast this is running. Every time you go to change the color, another 150 feet of paper has gone through the press. You're talking miles and miles and hundreds of miles sometimes of paper that you've gone through. And the presses today, where it might have taken 500 feet or 1,000 feet or whatever to run up, can now do it in 50 to 100. Because of the technology, because of the fact that it's all done digitally and the machine is able to self-adjust on the fly at that speed with using lasers and using all sorts of data tracking to be able to do that, the presses are so more efficient, right? You have presses today where they have plates. You load in 3 or 4 sets of plates. Press runs one job. It kicks out one set of plates. It puts in the next on its own, sets it up and starts running on the next job, and off it goes to do 3 or 4 or 5 jobs at a time without even having to shut the machine down. Technology has changed. And all that is done, but it's because people are sitting there going, how can we make things more efficient? How can we make things better? And asking their people, what are the things that you need to be able to be more effective? And that's where I think a lot of leadership breaks down, is they make assumptions without asking the question on a person-by-person basis. It's that human versus process thing where they focus on the process, but they don't ask the humans or they don't bring the human factor into it. And therefore, the changes that need to happen are nowhere near as effective as they should be. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, I'm coming from a place of empathy, so certainly we can apply a quality engineer, process improvement expert to make the changes. You can hire them. But there's a little bit in leadership. My angle here is think about the leadership. First of all, in this particular example, this leader never did the Gemba. They never actually walked to the floor until you were able to show them the scrap in that area. So do they feel comfortable coming out of their safe space and actually go see what's happening amongst the rank and file and the work that's being done? Sometimes leaders are scared. So you have to make sure that you spend time as you're trying to transition an organization. Understand the mindset and culture of what got the leader there may not be what's going to get to move them forward. The other thing that I think about is, do they even know to think or what questions to ask? Sometimes leaders don't even know what questions to ask. In my teaching and training, one, I ask them to listen more, and the only way you're going to listen more is if you ask thought-provoking questions. So do you spend time with the individuals doing the work? Do you even care? You have to have an element of caring, okay? This is so simple. So I may not be the best person to figure out what that changeover activity is to get it from, 500,000 sheets or whatever down to a changeover in seconds. But at the end of the day, I think you need to just start with the mindset of the leadership and say, what's important to you? Do you know what your people are doing? Have you ever actually watched and walked the floor to see what's happening? And you know what? Don't even have an agenda. Just ask people questions, how's their day going? And you know what? You'll get a wealth of information and knowledge and start stirring your curiosity. If a leader's afraid to do that and doesn't even know how to act or even be comfortable asking people questions, you may not have the right leader. So that's my position on that. It's a little harsh, but I also think hardly a lot about the management we have in place to affect these kinds of changes.
And that's interesting because I spoke at a conference the other day. And it was an online conference, but I spoke at a conference. And I started off by asking two questions, and it was all about leadership. And the first question was, as a leader, do you think that you have the tools in your tool belt right now to make you successful moving forward? And 67 or 70% of the people said yes. And then I said, okay, the next question is, do the people that work for you truly understand the purpose and vision of the company and how it affects them and how they can be successful moving forward? 29% said yes, and the vast majority said that they were unsure. So we all assume what we all assume. We assume that we have the skills. We assume that we have all the knowledge. We assume that until somebody asks us a question that we don't know the answer to. So that's the best thing, is we don't know what we don't know. And I think we all have those blind spots. We all have things we haven't got a clue about. We don't even know what the right question to ask. And that's where having trusted advisors come in, people with a different viewpoint, people that come and give it a fresh look. Somebody who sits there and goes, have you thought of this? Have you looked at that? Have you walked the floor recently? And I noticed this when I was walking through the floor the other day. I've never even noticed that, because we go blind. It's that commercial. We go nose blind to the things because we're so used to seeing it, or we're so used to being around it. We don't even see things anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that having that perspective and looking at things from different angles and different viewpoints, thinking about questions you've never asked before, leads to enormous change. And those changes could be slight. They could just be moving things from left to right or up to down. But those little changes could have enormous effect. But we have to all be open to making those changes happen.
Yeah, that's the first step. And I will say one thing, that a lot of business leaders may shy away from consultants or business owners that can come in with a fresh set of eyes. But I think a smart leader will realize, I don't know what I don't know. I can only see so much. And until I have somebody from the outside giving me their perspective, can I have that awareness and understanding to make better decisions? And I think leaders are afraid. Now, mind you, people have to pay for our expertise because we have a lot of that and that external view. But wouldn't it be nice to get a kind of a short circuit, quick assessment to understand what you don't know? Then you can move forward as a leader versus trying to do it on your own. And I fully agree with you. I've got multiple mentors, people in my inner circle, curating the best knowledge, and not to be afraid of if they say something that I don't want to hear, because I'll tell people that I'm training, let it sit a while. If you don't like what you heard, think about it, put it aside, come back to it, because maybe specifically what they said you needed is not exactly it, but you may see, you know what, there's some wisdom in that. Maybe I do need to step back and think differently, redo my strategy, et cetera. It may not be that way, but you know what, I do need to do something. There's always a gift in all of that. So it does start with leaders having the openness to ask the question, to say, I need help. I don't know what I don't know. I need another view so I can move this company forward. Or again, they may already be in your wheelhouse in the company. Just talk to the people in your company.
Absolutely. On the other hand, from our consultant point of view, wearing my consultant hat, I get crazy when people come in and just say, there's your problem. Bye. You know, I see the holes in the dike, but that's not my job. My job is not to fix the holes in the dike. It's just to point out that the holes are there in the dike. And by the way, there's that hole, that hole, and that hole. I have no idea how to fix it. That's not my responsibility. So I think that there's got to be a lot of conversation amongst people before you bring in a consultant. Are you bringing in somebody that's going to point out the problems with you? Or are you going to deal with somebody that has a reputation of not only being able to understand what the problems are, and also to help you work your way through it? And that leads to needs to be a two-way dialogue. You need to trust the consultant, and the consultant needs to trust that they can help you. And it can't just be a cash cow situation. You need to come in and say, look, this is what we need to do, and this is how we're going to fix it. Here's some different options, Mr. Customer. Which way is going to work for you? Because sometimes time is a problem. Sometimes budget is a problem. Sometimes politics are a problem. Yeah. And you need to sit there and understand as a consultant, what are the problems the actual company is having? And look at their particular challenges before you go and create your quote unquote solution that they can never implement.
And they may not be your ideal customer at that point in time, because they may not quite be ready for that partnership, to your point.
Exactly. Deborah, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I want to leave it on two notes. I want to make sure that people can get in touch with you. People know where the best way to get in touch with you. And we will put all this in the show notes as we always do.
So quite active on LinkedIn. And before I go there, Ben, this has been amazing. We've known each other for a bit, but I sincerely appreciate the questions. And this is so valuable to have these kinds of conversations and share with others. But to find me, I'm very active on LinkedIn, Deborah A. Coviello with an H, Deborah. I have a website, dropinceo.com, and Instagram, Twitter handles, dropinceo, and a Facebook page, Illumination Partners. So happy to connect with anybody, kick around some ideas. It starts with a relationship and a conversation, and maybe we'll do a transaction in the future. But all I want to do is just help people through their transitions and changes and elevate their performance. So Ben, thank you so much.
My extreme pleasure. And this is the question I ask everybody as they walk out the door. It's one of my favorite questions. When you walk out the door, when you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
I left my mark. I left a legacy. I'm better because I've known her. That's all.
Awesome. Thank you for being such a wonderful guest. Thank you for taking the time and being so generous with my audience. And I loved having you on the show.
My pleasure, Ben. Thank you.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?